Today is August 21, 2003, and colleagues expect us to go fairly quickly. We will first do a work session on Senate Bill 500, then a work session on Senate Bill 501. We are not going to have a public hearing today on Senate Bill 655. There's other amendments that are being considered, and we'll take that up again tomorrow. That's already on the agenda for tomorrow. And then, so then we just finish up with Senate Bill 939 today. So with that, open up a work session on Senate Bill 500. And Mr. Coben, just kind of tell us what this bill is.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 500 appropriates $49,000 to the Department of Human Services to provide fruits and vegetables from the farmers market to individuals eligible for the Women, Infant, and Children's Program, or WIC program. And it declares emergency effective 2003. Basically, this just ensures that people within this program can receive coupons to secure proper nutritional foods.
Okay. And colleagues, the bill is before you today mainly because of the decision that was made yesterday on the budget and the revenue package. We were holding this as, in fact, it's shown a couple of times in various media outlets, solely because we had not been able to identify where the funds were going to be coming from here for this program, since it is something new. And that has now been identified. This is a good bill, something I've supported all along, and glad that we're able to finally get this moving forward. So entertain a motion.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to make a motion. I move Senate Bill 500 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Backlund moves Senate Bill 500 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just making sure that I have it figured out. Do we know what the definition of a farmer's market is? Farmer's markets. Yeah, it just says farmer's markets. I'm assuming what we're talking about are the direct sales markets that have sprung up around the state, like the one in Eugene on Saturdays at the park blocks, that sort of thing.
Ms. Donaldo Dotson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, a farmer's market is like what you said. They're the markets that are on Saturday.
I can get you to identify yourself.
I'm sorry. I'm Danilda Dodson. I'm the administrator for the Office of Family Health at Department of Human Services. And those are the types of markets. They are not brokering markets. These are the actual farmers who come to market.
What they refer to as the direct sales markets.
Correct.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'll try to keep my comments very briefly, just by saying that I just know of no greater program than the WIC program. It's just in my area, it has provided the health of small children and babies, and I honestly don't know what would have happened had they not had the WIC program. And so greatly appreciated, and I think this voucher program would be just as excellent.
Mm-hmm. Further discussion, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as we're going to be doing testimonials, I should add that being able to buy fruits and vegetables from direct sales farmers markets means that people will get the very best available food that you can have in Oregon during the summer, fresh and safe.
Thank you. No further discussion. Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Both aye.
Excused. Excused.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. And Representative Berger, would you carry this?
I would.
Okay.
Be delighted.
And Senate Bill 500 then moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Open up, and that closes the work session on Senate Bill 500, and open up a work session on Senate Bill 501. Mr. Coben. How's this different?
Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 501 is somewhat similar, except that it does appropriate $40,000 to the Department of Human Services for the seniors farmer market. This is available to people who are 60 years of age and older, gives them redemption coupons, again, allows them to purchase fruits and vegetables from the market to ensure a good nutritional diet.
Entertain a motion.
Excuse me, Chair. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 501 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Backman moves Senate Bill 501 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Colleagues?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make a quick comment. The meeting today seems a bit different than our meeting last night. And I just thought I'd mention that.
All right. Call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Chair votes aye, and Representative Backman, chair this.
Happy to.
And yeah, and she, and I know you had the other two excused. Okay, great. And that then Senate Bill 501 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation with Representative Backman as a carrier, and that closes the work session on Senate Bill 501. And open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 939. John Chandler. And Michelle Deister.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler, Oregon Building Industry Association, here on behalf of Senate Bill 939. I've handed out written testimony, which is identical to what I gave, I think, all of you here at your offices here over the last few days. This is a very complicated subject matter, so I wanted to give you as much information as we could in advance of the hearing, either to put your minds at ease or for any questions that we could address. And Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do first is to thank the work group that helped me on this bill. Michelle Deister, the League of Oregon Cities, Burton Lee Special Districts Association, Arch Slack Association of Oregon Counties, B.J. Smith from Clackamas County, and Marge Caffori from City of Portland, plus a couple dozen technical folks from the city, the districts, the counties. SDCs are, as I said, they're very complicated, they're very complex. Is at the local level, they're administered by people who have the letters behind their names and took math classes and been good at them. Those of us who worked on this bill relied a lot on their technical expertise. I relied a lot on our partners in local government. On behalf of the builders, we're not wild about SDCs. We don't like paying them. We grump at cities every now and again. We sue somebody about them. But we understand that we need to have them in place to give the infrastructure necessary for development to occur. And by the same token, the local governments don't enjoy imposing SDCs, but they're part of the infrastructure financing situation that they use. As a result, the SEC law was passed in 1989 by the same group of people who worked together to produce the law in the first place. It's been amended three times since then by the same group of folks. We've worked together in a partnership, in a sense, both on at the local level when SDCs are imposed and collected and in legislation. And what you have in front of you in Senate Bill 939 is an agreed-to product. We didn't roll each other. We didn't try to play sneaky games. If we agreed to it, we saw a need and addressed it. It's in the bill. If we didn't, it isn't. 939 does not add any SDCs. It does not take them away. It makes a series of corrective, technical, and I'm not trying to say that in a, you know, doesn't change the law sense, but a very hyper-technical way of changing how the law is administered. The bill started out life in Representative Close's committee in the House, as House Bill 2983, got to the Senate and sort of stalled along with a bunch of other bills in the Senate. We put the paddles on it, brought it back to life as Senate Bill 939. And again, I appreciate very much the people we work with on this bill. I think it's a good product. We've done this, as I say, three times before. and this is the best work group we've had. It's the best conversation we've had about SDCs. I think we reached, all of us, I certainly did, new understandings about how they work, why they work, what areas we need to work on collectively, cooperatively in the future as far as making the system function well and fairly. And, Mr. Chairman, I will let you tell me how much detail you want about the changes in the bill. I give you the written testimony that walks through each of the changes. The line numbers are off because of the we have the A2 amendments, which I'm sure staff will explain to you, are conflict amendments only. They do no other substantive change, but they throw off the line references in the testimony, which I'm sure you can follow along just by the printing, if nothing else. I'll be glad to walk through it, Mr. Chairman. I'll be glad to hush here and take questions, as up to whatever your pleasure is.
If you can give us just a little bit more, I mean, just hit the highlights so that we can have a little more information in anticipation of maybe some folks who might have questions.
Happy to do it.
Get those answers before they ask the question. And the second and third questions that usually follow up the
yes.
original question.
I'll work off the A2 amendments, since I think those are the ones we'll be asking you to move forward. The first change appears on line 19 to 21, first page there. There's two flavors of system development charges, improvement fees and reimbursement fees. Improvement fees are those that are building something new, a new sewage treatment plant, a new water plant, a new road, something of that sort. Reimbursement fees are those charged when there's already an existing facility, a water plant, that has capacity in it. And they sell it, basically. The local government sells it to developers for use for new residents. In this change here, and some of these may seem awfully minor, but they're trying to solve specific problems. In this case, we're saying that before they can charge a reimbursement fee, there has to be capacity. And the local government is the one that determines whether or not capacity exists. And it's worded in that way specifically, both to make the point I just made, and also to allow the local government some flexibility. And for example, stormwater is one of that came up all the time. A stormwater system capacity depends on what assumptions you make about rainfall events. And if you have a 100-year flood event, then all of a sudden your capacity you thought you had doesn't exist anymore. This language will not only require the local governments to make a finding or a determination of capacity, but allow them flexibility to make sure that they can apply whatever standards they like. But when they do that, that's when they determine what they can sell to developers, what we get to pay for. Next change. Oh, we've got another conforming piece. Good heavens. That's going to be harder than I thought.
You want to just look at the original bill instead of the...
That might be simpler for me, if you don't mind me doing that.
And colleagues, the A2 amendments, as you can see, are just proposed to resolve conflicts only if House Bill 2278 becomes law. And that's the sole purpose of the A2s, which we'll need to adopt. But it doesn't change anything that's already come out with the Senate amendments in the A.N. Gross version of Senate Bill 939.
Okay,
that's correct. Next change I'll highlight then, Mr. Chairman, is on A.N. Gross bill. It's on page 3. Actually, on the bottom of page 2, carrying over to page 3, talking about the reimbursement fee being calculated, an improvement fee. Having the methodology available for public inspection, I should say that anytime an SDC is imposed, there has to be a methodology done by the local government, which goes through all the several factors that are set out in the state law. Then that methodology then results in the imposition of the fee. What we're seeing here in the changes on top of page 3 in the A.N. Gross version, they're tying it specifically to the need for increased capacity. The idea behind system development charges is that as the community grows, whether it be residential, commercial, industrial, as that development occurs, there's a demand placed on the system, water system, the roads, and so forth. And this is making it clear that the purpose of what the calculation has to do is to address that need for increased capacity. And again, it sounds like that's the sort of thing that's kind of implicit in the existing language. We're making it clearer here, and I believe providing some more guidance for local governments. The next change I'll stress is on the same page 3, lines 11 through 13. And this is attempting to untangle a real thorny issue. As I said earlier, there's two flavors of SDCs. Occasionally a jurisdiction, oftentimes a jurisdiction, will have need or reason to impose both, do the calculations based on both a reimbursement fee and an improvement fee methodology. What we're seeing here with this language is that they can do that. They should do that when it's appropriate, but that the end result is still that they can't charge more than one fee's worth, if you will. And we danced around a number of different terminologies. My clients often refer to it as impacts, when it's not accurate. It's not an impact fee. It's based on developing system capacity for future users. And what we're saying with this language is, as long as the methodology demonstrates that you're providing the same capacity, you can charge both a reimbursement and an improvement fee. And again, this is hoping to provide more guidance for local governments when they're faced with that situation, so that the development community paying the fee and the folks imposing it understand what the rules are and that the calculations are done so the fee is equitable based on the services being provided. The next change deal is on page 4, the next significant change. Which, once the system development charges are imposed, the local government goes through the methodology. There's a requirement in the law that I'll talk more about here in a minute, that they provide notice to interested parties. They can be builders, they can be citizens, or whoever, that the FCC is being proposed. Then there is the actual local government implementation or imposition, adoption of the ordinance. That's the time in terms of any legal challenges that gets triggered, is when that occurs. Once the FCC is in place, though, local governments often have a need to increase the fee or change projects on and off the list. In other words, the type of projects that are being built. And I'll talk about both of those separately, because we're addressing them separately in the law here. With regard to the fee, language on page 4 of the Angros bill talks about how the fee can be changed without triggering a new methodology. And what we're saying here is it can be based on a change in the cost of materials, labor, or real property applied to projects. In other words, if you're looking, you assume a certain price for asphalt when you do your SDC and the price of asphalt goes up, we think it's fair the local government needs this flexibility to be able to say, well, the price of asphalt went up, we're building the same road, but the fee has to go up to accommodate that. That doesn't necessarily require methodology change because there's no change in the underlying calculations. It's simply an external factor. We're also using the terms project capacity as a trigger for that change. If a water system has a certain amount of project capacity and an Endangered Species Act or some other restriction is placed on water system, the capacity changes, that's the same thing essentially as the price of asphalt going up. So any of those kind of external events can trigger the ability for local government to raise the fee without going back through all the methodological hoops. The other thing we're pointing out here is being more specific in some language we placed in the statute, I think last session, about using a cost index, a specific cost index. And we're describing what those specific cost index can be. It can be some external, it can be the assessor's document, it can be a CPI, construction cost index, whatever it might be, that allows the local government to increase it as long as they say, it's, you know, state what it is, so that the other people involved, such as my clients, know what the escalator is going to be. And the whole point of this section is to provide not only flexibility for local government, but some guidance for the development community. Next thing you can change is on page 5, dealing with the credit issue. When system development charges are imposed, let's say for a road to improve a piece of highway, development comes along, and as part of the development approval process, the developer is required to build a turn lane or some other feature of that road. If that development condition is part of the capital improvement plan, then the developer can get credit against the system development charge for doing the improvement. In other words, the cost of that turn lane comes off the SDC, basically. Now, before that can happen, and this is something else I'll touch on in a moment, that plan improvement has to be on the capital improvement plan list. What this language here on the credit is trying to do is clarify again how those things get out awarded. If a developer proposes a credit, this language is saying you have to prove that it's part of the condition of approval is on the capital improvement plan, and then the local government, what we're saying here on page 5 is the local government can deny the credit if we don't meet the requirements of the law, or if the project that we build and are asking credit for isn't on a list, isn't on the project list. And the situation we're attempting to resolve here is one that's arisen, and it's actually a true story, where the jurisdiction's plan said improvements to North 1st Street or North Main Street, and the developer did improvements to North Main Street, turned in for a credit, and the city said, well, we didn't mean that section of North Main Street, which we thought was kind of unfriendly of them. So we're trying to, again, provide some guidance here for both sides, so that everybody knows what the rules are going in. The next significant change...
Mr. Chandler?
Yes.
How did that resolve? How did that work out, that little unfriendly episode?
It is in the process of being resolved by virtue of another branch of government, Representative. And I don't mean the governor. We'd be more than happy to have his help, but he's probably got his hands full on other things right now. The next change I want to mention, and then I'll hush. You've been patient, but I'll remind you, Chair, we've been left through a pass for this. So, and it's still not quite as bad as the securities lawyers you had to listen to the other night, but it comes right close. On page 7, we're talking about another one of the modification issues. And this earlier, just a minute ago, I talked about the need to increase the cost sometimes of the fee because of the change in the cost of the project. On page 7, on lines 6 through 18, we're talking about the need to change projects on and off the list. And again, what we're trying to do with this section is to balance the equities, essentially. Local government needs to have a flexible plan. It's not in our interest, it's not in the local government interest to say, in cement, in concrete, we are going to go to the west of town, here's the list of improvements, only to find out that going west doesn't work, but we're going to instead go north. We want to have the ability to be flexible on which projects get built in what sequence. And frankly, oftentimes it's my clients who, because of that credit I talked to you about, we can only get the credit if our project that we're building shows up on the list. If it isn't on the list and we're required to build it, we'll sometimes go to the city and ask nicely if our project can be put on the list so that we can get a credit for having done it. The flexibility is very important. Where we've run into some problems, though, and what this language is attempting to address is situations where the jurisdiction changes, moves projects onto the list and increases the fee significantly by so doing. And because the methodology has been done sometimes several years previously, there's no way to challenge that. There's no way for us to do anything other than show up at a public hearing and squawk. So this is probably the most significant change and one that I think will hopefully work the way we're intending. I mentioned earlier that the local government maintains a list of interested parties. Any of you who find yourself with time on your hands during the interim can sign up for SDC notification lists. I don't necessarily recommend it because it's not particularly stimulating, but you could. The city maintains this list. What this language is saying is, if they propose to change the project list that the SDCs are based upon and increase the cost, if that change in the project list will increase the cost, they send out the notice to the same list, same folks like myself or any of you who get bored in the interim. And then if there's an objection, it puts the burden on my clients basically to pay attention, watch what's happening. If the cost goes up, the project list has changed, the FTC has increased, we don't think it's appropriate, we can then notify the city. Then and only then would a public hearing be held. Otherwise, we're hoping this will work in the way we're intending. The process at the city will just go forward without any glitches. We think this is a good compromise between on the one hand, need to cement the list a little bit more so that doesn't occur, but still maintain flexibility at the local level. Finally, Mr. Chairman, I think that's probably it, Mr. Chairman. There is an effective date issue I want to be sure to mention. The bill provides for two different effective dates, basically. The first one is the obvious one, that the bill goes into effect the way the bill's going to effect. There's no emergency clause. We called out specifically two sections for a different date, a longer time for local governments to work on it. And we did that because a couple sections of the bill are going to perhaps require local governments to retool their list, their project list. And we felt as a group that it was fair to give them more time before those changes take effect. We'd give the local governments the time to do the work. It's not in my interest to force jurisdictions, particularly smaller ones, to spend a whole bunch of money that they don't need to, frankly, particularly since they get to charge my clients for the money they spend anyhow. I think it's a good bill. I'm very pleased with it. I'd like to state my appreciation to my friends in the work group. They listen to my concerns openly, honestly. I think we worked in the spirit of trying to get a product that the development community can live with and benefit from, that provides necessary infrastructure financing to local governments. I commend it to you. Thank you for your patience and attention. I'll be glad to take any questions.
All right. Any testimony from you folks? The rest of the work group?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Michelle Deister with the League of Oregon Cities, and would echo Mr. Chandler's comments about SDCs being a fairly complicated law, as evidence by, just to visually reinforce that. This is my SDC file from the 2001 legislative session, House Bill 2983, and this is my file for Senate Bill 939. This was a process of probably 7 months of negotiation, and it is complicated, and it is important for all the stakeholders. Clearly, the builders can't build without the necessary infrastructure, water, sewer, streets being put into place. And on the other hand, we have communities that choose to charge to help finance these particular systems so that they aren't being built and having the effect of being subsidized by existing residents. So I think, generally speaking, these changes will help to give a better understanding for all the stakeholders involved of SDC methodologies and lists and processes in the hopes of better conversations and discussions and fewer lawsuits. That's really the goal of what we're trying to do here. And, you know, there were some changes that were particularly... one in particular change was, I think, one of the hardest for us to make, and that is the change that Mr. Chandler referenced with regard to changes to the project list that have the effect of increasing the system development charges. And that's because sometimes it's difficult in the early planning phases of these projects to determine the details and cost estimates of what these projects are going to be, you know, further on down the line. So I did want to note that for the record, and I do believe that the changes here in this bill do nothing to limit the ability of local governments to value their systems, what they're worth, and how they should be charged, or value the capacity that is being, you know, the subject of these charges. So with that, I also would like to thank the participants of the work group. It was a long, hard haul, but we periodically get together and collectively monitor this law to ensure that it's working well at the local level. And if we find that these changes aren't doing what's intended, we may very well be back before the 2005 legislative session, because it's in all of our interests to have it work well. Thank you.
Chair Doyle, members of the committee, I'm Burton Wiest on behalf of Special Districts Association of Oregon, and I just wanted to very quickly, for the record, touch on the conflict amendment and the need for you to adopt the A2 amendments. House Bill 2278 is a bill that was put in by the Oregon Law Commission, and it's trying to standardize the use of the word special district in the statute. This was done for the city's last session. It was our turn this time, and in the statute, special districts are referred to as special service districts, variety of other expressions, so the bill standardizes it to be special district. Inadvertently, the bill could have the effect, however, of special districts losing their authority to levy a systems development charge if these conflict resolution amendments are not added. And since we have about 200 special districts, sewer and water districts and park districts that levy systems development charges, we very much want to make sure that both the record reflects what the purpose of this amendment is to ensure that we still are eligible due to no fault of our own to the definitional change. So we urge you to adopt the A2 amendments so we don't run into that problem. And then finally, I too would add that after years of this, I'm hoping Mr. Chandler will go away on systems development charges, but I'm sure that'll never happen. But we too appreciate the spirit of compromise. It's too bad other issues can't be worked on the same spirit that this worked on, and I too appreciate the patience of the legislature with this and the patience of the work group. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I know one way Mr. Chandler would go away on SDCs. Just not have them. Mr. Schlack, did you...
Is it too late for conceptual amendment, Mr. Chairman?
We don't hate him that much. Mr. Schlack, did you have anything to offer as part of the work group?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Art Schlack with the Association of Oregon Counties, and I can only echo what has been said here in part, but I do want to emphasize that the system development charges are kind of a love-hate relationship between local government and the development community, which is necessary to provide the infrastructure If the infrastructure is not provided, Mr. Chandler is not going to help build the communities because local government's not going to have the financial capability to provide the infrastructure that is so desperately needed to serve the development that we're hoping to attract in the state of Oregon at this point. We have worked with Mr. Chandler and others for the last several sessions in a collaborative process to provide the legislature with, I'll call it technical amendments and other, primarily technical amendments to make the systems development system work well. We hope to do that, and we only hope that each time the legislature meets that we bring you these bills, that we have consensus. Because if that ever happens that we don't, it'll be a long session. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I do recommend approval of Senate Bill 939.
Thank you. Any questions for the committee? All right. Representative Berger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing that I've observed with systems development charges is the wide range of charges that various places have. So I want to commend you for having a methodology for the change, because I think from your state, it gives you some sense of peace. Knowing that there is a methodology in place so that you don't suddenly find out. I wonder, just for the benefit of the committee, though, if you might just give us a short example of a time when there would be a hearing. I notice here that you have to notify local government in so many days that there would be a hearing, and under what circumstances would you, from your trades association, require a hearing, or others, if Michelle wanted to address that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, let me just, as an example, and this is, I won't mention the jurisdiction, but it's fairly close to true life. I may have the facts somewhat incorrect. Where a jurisdiction proposed adding a significant number of park facilities to their plan and charging accordingly and increasing the fee tremendously, or even, you know, leave out the adjective. Had this bill been in place, I think we would have, and the example I'm using is one that did go to litigation. Had this been in place, I think we would have had the opportunity to go to the city before that occurred and say, excuse me, we don't believe these are growth related, and we believe that there's a need to have a discussion about why you were charging these fees, why these projects have been added to the list. And I think that our hope is, and Michelle said it very well, these don't get litigated all that often. But when they do, they're expensive, they're messy, it's usually the smaller jurisdictions, because they tend to have less money to hire consultants, they don't have the staff expertise. And in particular, as you know, Representative, in a small town, a lawsuit like that can be very divisive. And we are hoping to avoid that by having a way to have a public hearing on the issue. Because oftentimes, if the local government doesn't understand the impact of what they're doing, but is told it, I know when I was on the city council in Redmond, it was good to hear that, just because okay. Or maybe you didn't decide to change the mind at the city council level. At least you understood what the impact was. So that's what we're hoping to have occur as a result of that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, if I could just add to that, I think, generally speaking, the primary purpose of that is for the development community to be able to have the opportunity to take a look at how much of the additional projects are growth related. Yes. There's language in the bill that says that is what they get to evaluate, the percentage of the proposed project that is intended to be funded by growth. Now remember, on this project list, the project list is a living document and it's going to change over time, and that's why we used a percentage, because what you know, you anticipate the project to cost at the early planning stages may be different because of those outside factors such as the cost of asphalt that Mr. Chandler mentioned. And so this appears to the parties who are sitting at the table to be a fair way to try to address that. So it does give them additional input. Again, it's one of those situations where the underlying methodology may not necessarily change, But if the charge is going up, folks want the opportunity to take a look at that. And frankly, we thought that was fair. It does impose, make no mistake, an additional burden on local governments. But again, the goal is to have better discussions and fewer lawsuits.
All right. Thank you.
Ms. Chairman, if I might, particularly in response to this, and this is something you can tell your colleagues, and hopefully you get calls on this or letters on this from your jurisdictions, it's our commitment on behalf of the builders, and I think I can speak for the local governments here. A lot of what we're doing with the legislation, well, let me finish, is to foster conversations at the local level. In my experience as an advocate for builders, where we've had SDC conversations that went well is because we were all in the room at the local level, talking, discussing, arguing, hashing out, examining, and then it's like our bill. If you work together, and it's a truism, but particularly on something like this, if everybody's in the room discussing it, people get along better, that you don't end up with litigation. This little provision here will force my guys to pay attention. It'll force them to look at it and understand what's happening. It'll also help force the local government to listen. And that forcing of conversations, to the extent we can do that and make the people, it sounds like it's going to be prescriptive, I don't think it will be, encourage them to work together. That's our hope. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it'll work.
Well said.
Thank you. Anything further? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for testimony. And no one else scheduled to testify on this, so we can close the public hearing on Senate Bill 939 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 939. And Representative Backlund, we need to adopt the Dash A2 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we adopt the Dash A2 amendments to Senate Bill 939.
Thank you. Representative Backlund moves adoption of the Dash A2 amendments to Senate Bill 939. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so ordered. Mr. Backlund?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 939 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Backlund moves Senate Bill 939 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would, having listened to the conversations of the four people who testified, I would certainly add my commendation to the work of the work group. I think that's the way we'd all like to see things be concluded, and so I'm pleased.
Right. Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Both aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, and we'll ask Representative Close to carry this bill. And Senate Bill 939 will move forward with a due pass recommendation. And that closes the work session on Senate Bill 939, and nothing further before the committee. We are adjourned.